Daikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're plunging into a really profound philosophical work, Either Or by Søren Kierkegaard.
A big one.
Definitely. And I know maybe some of you hear philosophy and think, oh boy, this is going to be heavy.
Yeah, it can sound intimidating, can't it?
But honestly, this book speaks so directly to, well, to us right now, in this world just overflowing with choices.
Infinite choices, yeah.
Exactly. Where you get that analysis paralysis or, you know, FOMO, the fear of missing out. It feels overwhelming sometimes.
It really does.
And Either Or offers this, like, powerful framework. It really pushes us to face that basic question, how should I live?
It's less about giving answers and more about framing that question, isn't it?
Totally. And it provides this unique way to think about making decisive choices, finding, you know, authentic meaning.
What's amazing is Kierkegaard, writing way back in the 19th century, He was already grappling with this kind of crisis of meaning that feels so, well, modern.
It's uncanny, really.
Yeah. He's not just giving us dusty old philosophy. He's challenging us, you, the listener, to look past the surface, to really examine the big choices that define who we are.
And it's not about saying what to choose.
No, not at all. It's much more about the significance, the weight of the act of choosing itself. That's the core.
So who was this guy? Søren Abbe Kierkegaard. Danish philosopher, theologian, writer.
The first existentialist, many people say.
Right. Focused on individual existence, freedom, choice, responsibility. Heavy stuff, but presented in such a unique way.
He lived in Copenhagen during its golden age, a time of huge intellectual energy.
And he wasn't afraid to challenge the big names like Hegel or the kind of formal, lukewarm Christianity of the time.
No, he definitely ruffled feathers. And his perspective for either, or it wasn't just cooked up in an ivory tower.
No, his own life was deeply marked by choice, wasn't it? Especially that broken engagement.
Exactly. His engagement to Regine Olsen. Breaking that off clearly haunted him and, well, it poured into his writing. That's why his exploration of love, commitment, regret, it feels so raw.
So intensely personal.
Yeah, deeply human. It gives the book this psychological depth that's just gripping.
And then there's how he wrote it, not just under his own name.
The pseudonyms. Yes, this is key. He called it indirect communication.
So Either Or isn't technically by Kierkegaard.
Well, not directly. It's presented as papers written by these fictional characters. A, the aesthete.
Living for pleasure and avoiding boredom.
Right. And then Judge Wilhelm, B, the ethicist.
Championing commitment and responsibility.
And these papers were supposedly found by another character, Victor Eremita, the editor.
It sounds complicated, but it's actually brilliant, isn't it?
It is. It's not just a literary gimmick. It's a philosophical strategy.
Yeah.
It lets him fully present each worldview from the inside, almost like method acting in philosophy.
So you, the reader, you're not just being told what to think.
Exactly. You're thrown into the debate. You have to engage, wrestle with the ideas, maybe even pick a side. He's not lecturing. He's provoking.
Forcing you to confront your own assumptions.
That's the whole point of indirect communication for him. He wants to awaken you to the urgency of choosing. Because for Kierkegaard, truth isn't just an idea in your head.
It's something you have to live.
With passionate inwardness, as he put it. You have to feel it, commit to it.
Okay, so let's talk about the book itself. Either. It's not your typical philosophy book, right? No neat argument laid out chapter by chapter.
No, not at all. It's this sprawling, almost overwhelming work of literary philosophy, a collage, really.
Essays, aphorisms, letters, even a fictional diary.
Yeah, it's designed to be experienced, not just analyzed. You kind of immerse yourself in it.
And the central premise.
It's this dramatic showdown between two fundamental ways of living. The aesthetic life versus the ethical life.
Pleasure versus duty, sort of.
In a way, but it's much deeper than that. It's about how you find meaning, how you avoid despair, how you become an authentic self. That's the question haunting every page. How should one live?
So when you read it, you first get pulled into the world of A, the aesthete.
Right. And it's seductive, sophisticated, witty, always chasing the interesting, the beautiful, the immediate pleasure.
Sounds pretty good, actually.
It does. But as you spend time with A, you start to see the cracks, this constant need for novelty, this terror of boredom.
It leads somewhere dark, doesn't it?
It leads to melancholy, emptiness, and ultimately, Kierkegaard says, despair. It's like that firework analogy you use, brilliant flash, then just smoke and darkness.
Hmm. And then the book shifts gears completely.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
We meet Judge Wilhelm, B, the ethicist. He writes these long letters to A, basically picking apart the aesthetic life.
And arguing for the ethical life.
Exactly. A life built on commitment, responsibility, moral principles. He argues this is the path to real selfhood, real stability, real happiness.
So freedom isn't endless options.
For the judge, no. True freedom comes from choosing, from committing, from limiting yourself in a way by choosing a specific path.
That's counterintuitive, isn't it? We usually think freedom is having all the options.
We do. But Kierkegaard, through Judge Wilhelm, challenges that.
So the core insight running through the whole thing is
the act of choosing itself. That's what makes you who you are. If you refuse to choose, you just drift, you stay fragmented.
But if you choose, if you commit,
then you start creating a self, a real coherent self.
Mm.
Either or isn't just presenting arguments. It's like holding up a mirror.
Forcing you to look at your own choices, the big ones.
Yeah, the ones that really define your life.
Okay, let's dive a bit deeper into how he actually structures this. It starts with the editor character, Victor Eremita.
Right, the preface. He sets the scene, tells us he found these papers from A and B. It immediately signals the book's unusual structure and the core conflict.
Then we get volume one, The Papers of A, immersing us in that aesthetic world.
And A is magnetic,
yep,
in his way. You get his diapsilmata, these short, sharp aphorisms, witty, but also despairing underneath.
Like that Ferris one about marriage.
Oh, yeah. Marry, and you will regret it. Don't marry, you will also regret it. Marry or don't marry, you will regret it either way. It goes on like that.
It perfectly captures that paralysis, doesn't it? Seeing the downside everywhere, so you just freeze.
Exactly. It shows how endless reflection without commitment can become a kind of prison. Life becomes a cosmic joke you can only observe cynically.
A brilliant but devastating way to live.
Then A gets into analyzing Mozart's opera, Don Giovanni.
Ah, yes. The immediate erotic stages or the musical erotic.
Right. For A, Don Giovanni is the ultimate symbol of pure, unreflective desire. The sensual drive that lives only in the moment.
And he thinks music captures this best.
Yeah, because music unfolds in time, moment by moment, like that desire. It's not fixed like a painting. It shows A's fascination with uncommitted desire, treating it almost like an intellectual puzzle.
Analyzing connection instead of experiencing it?
Precisely. And then there's his crop rotation theory.
That sounds agricultural.
Huh. It's a metaphor. It's his manual for avoiding boredom. But it's not about doing new things.
It's about changing how you look at the same things.
Exactly. Master the art of remembering and forgetting. Be arbitrary. Never get too invested in anything or anyone. Keep rotating your perspective to make the old seem new.
Wow. That sounds exhausting and incredibly superficial.
It is. It's all about keeping life interesting on the surface, but it prevents any real depth or connection. You're always an observer, never truly in your life.
And the darkest part of A's world is the seducer's diary.
Absolutely. This is the climax of volume one. It's supposedly written by this character, Johannes the Seducer.
And it's just chilling.
It really is. He meticulously details plotting the seduction of a young woman, Cordelia. But his pleasure isn't about love or even really desire.
It's about the manipulation, the intellectual game.
Exactly. The psychological control. And once he wins, once he's conquered her emotionally, he just abandons her.
Oh.
It's a brutal look at the emptiness, the cruelty, and the deep self-deception that can lie beneath that sophisticated aesthetic surface. It shows where that path, taken to its extreme, can lead.
A really powerful warning.
Definitely. But then, just as you're reeling from that, the whole tone shifts. Volume 2. The Papers of B, Judge Wilhelm.
The ethical counter-argument.
Passionate, reasoned, grounded. It's like stepping into a different world. He writes two long letters directly to A.
And the first one tackles marriage, the aesthetic validity of marriage.
Yes, he takes A's dismissal of marriage head on. He argues marriage isn't the death of romance or beauty. It has its own profound aesthetic.
How so?
It's not based on fleeting moments, but on time, shared history, commitment. A conscious choice to build something together. He argues this creates a richer, duper beauty than the constant hunt for novelty.
So commitment itself can be beautiful.
That's his argument. A different kind of beauty, maybe, but more enduring.
And the second letter, the balance between the aesthetic and the ethical. That sounds like the main event.
It really is the philosophical heart of the whole book. The judge tells A flat out, your problem is you refuse to choose.
That failure to commit.
Right. He argues that a person only truly becomes a self, a coherent personality, through making decisive either choices. That's what gives life meaning and structure.
And he introduces this idea of choosing oneself.
Yes. It means actively accepting who you are, your history, your responsibilities, your circumstances, and forging an identity through your choices within that reality.
So freedom isn't escaping limits, it's embracing them.
Embracing the limits that make a specific life possible. That ethical choice, that commitment, is what rescues you from the despair of infinite paralyzing possibility. It's how you build a self.
But it doesn't quite end there, does it? There's that final sermon.
The ultimatum. It's short. Kind of appended. It suggests that even the ethical life, while better than the aesthetic, isn't the final stage.
There's something beyond.
It points towards a religious stage. The idea is that from God's perspective, we're always in the wrong, suggesting a need for something more than human ethics, perhaps faith or grace. It hints the journey continues.
Okay, so pulling back, what are the huge themes here, the big takeaway?
Well, number one is obviously that clash, the aesthetic versus the ethical life.
Pleasure-seeking versus responsibility.
Yeah, the immediate, uncommitted, novelty-driven life versus the life of duty, principles, commitment. And it makes you ask, doesn't it? In our world today, which drive is stronger in us? The hunt for the interesting or building on things that last?
A really relevant question. Mm. And tied to that is the sheer importance of choice.
Absolutely crucial. Kierkegaard insists it's not so much what you choose, but that you choose passionately, decisively.
Because not choosing
means you remain undeveloped, fragmented. That's a state of despair. Choosing is what creates you. It forces you to think, doesn't it, about a big choice you made. How did just making the choice change things?
It really does. It focuses you, gives you direction.
Right. Which leads to the next theme. Despair as the sickness of the self.
It's not just being sad. It's deeper.
It's a spiritual condition, he thinks. A broken relationship with yourself. The aesthete despairs because there's no solid self there, just moments. The ethical choice grounds you, gives you that anchor.
That makes sense. That feeling of aimlessness when you lack direction. That is a kind of despair.
Exactly. And for the aesthete, what's the great enemy? Boredom.
Right. He calls it the root of all evil.
His whole life is a flight from it. But that frantic crop rotation, that constant search for distraction,
yeah.
It ironically leads to a deeper emptiness.
It's like chasing shadows. In our super-stimulated world, are we really beating boredom or just creating a different kind of void?
A profound question. And finally, Kierkegaard uses love, seduction, and marriage as these philosophical battlegrounds.
Johannes the Seducer is the ultimate aesthetic act, right? All manipulation, no commitment.
Purely momentary controlling. And Judge Wilhelm's defense of marriage is the ultimate ethical stand. Public promise, shared history, faithful love.
It forces you to think about what we value in relationships. Is it the fleeting excitement or the enduring partnership?
Tough questions.
Either or is just packed with memorable lines, isn't it? Quotes that stick with you.
Oh, absolutely. They cut right through. You already mentioned A's famous one.
Marry and you will regret it. Don't marry. You will also regret it. Yeah, that captures the aesthete's paralysis perfectly. Seeing potential regret everywhere so you do nothing.
It's brilliant and bleak. And then his other core belief.
Boredom is the root of all evil. The gods were bored, therefore they created human beings.
It shows his whole motivation is negative, running away from emptiness, not towards something meaningful.
But then Judge Wilhelm comes back with such force.
He does, like this. The choice itself is decisive for the content of the personality. Through the choice, the personality immerses itself in the thing chosen, and when it does not choose, it withers away and pines.
That's it right there. Choice creates the self. Not choosing lets it fade away. Powerful.
And even more direct, choose yourself. In choosing yourself, you choose your eternal validity.
It's a command, almost. Take responsibility for creating who you are through your commitments. Own your life.
Exactly. And there's that other quote, technically from his journals, but it fits the spirit perfectly.
Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards.
Ah, yes. That beautiful paradox. We figure things out looking back, but we have to make the choices now, looking ahead, often, without knowing the outcome.
The human condition in a nutshell. So how do we actually use this stuff? How does this 19th century philosophy apply today?
Well, one massive application is for overcoming analysis paralysis and FOMO.
Definitely. We have so many options now. Careers, partners, lifestyles. Yeah. It's easy to get completely stuck.
Paralyzed. And either or basically says, look, real freedom isn't having infinite options open. It's found in committing to something specific. Stop worrying about the better thing you might be missing and choose. Build something.
That's a huge relief in a way. Permission to just choose.
It is. and it totally reshapes how we can think about relationships and modern dating.
The aesthetic approach, the seducer, or maybe endless swiping, it's all about novelty, keeping options open.
Judge Wilhelm offers this countercultural argument for the deep satisfaction in commitment, in shared history, in choosing one person through thick and thin, depth over breadth.
A challenge to the way things often are now. What else?
It also impacts how we think about finding meaning in work and daily life.
Beyond just follow your passion, which can feel a bit aesthetic sometimes.
Right, that constant need for stimulation. Judge Wilhelm suggests that profound meaning comes from ethical commitment, doing your job well, contributing, fulfilling your duties. That builds a stable sense of purpose that might actually be more reliable than chasing passion.
That's a really grounding thought. And fundamentally, it's about crafting a personal identity.
Yes. The book is a manual for self-creation. It pushes you to reflect, what do I really value? And then make choices that align with those values.
So choosing oneself isn't just passive acceptance. It's active.
Actively taking responsibility for who you are and who you're becoming. Not just drifting along or letting others define you.
Wow. Okay. Wrapping up this deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much here. For me, the biggest lesson is that idea of life being authored, not discovered. Your choices write your story. Refusing to choose just leaves the page blank.
That's beautifully put.
And the insight that chasing pleasure purely to avoid boredom, it's a dead end.
Yeah.
It leads straight to despair because there's no solid center.
Absolutely. And for me, it's that realization that commitment isn't the enemy of freedom, it's the condition for it. True freedom is binding yourself to something worthwhile. That's what gives life shape and purpose.
So ultimately, you become who you are through your choices. Your identity is the sum of your commitments.
Yes. And maybe the final thought for you, the listener, is this. Either or isn't just asking you to understand these ideas. It's urging you to confront the need to choose for yourself. What big choices are you facing right now? Maybe even avoiding. That could be the key to defining your authentic self.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.